recording. Let's keep going.
Wait, so we're starting the episode.
Oh, fine. Yeah, okay.
Hey, welcome to Twin Peaks, guys. Just to disregard the last two episodes where Kyle feigned disappointment with Michael, and then he pretended to hire me on as the new host, because we did a recording last week where I screwed up. So now we're just going to pretend that didn't happen, but now we're doing this. So welcome to Twin Peaks, Season 2, Episode 1.
I'm happy with that, Kyle.
Well, to clarify, the show is Twin Peeps, but
oh, okay.
You know.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. You see, this is why I failed my audition.
This is the name of the show, right?
Yeah, this is why I'm not actually the host of this show. This is why we're re-recording the episode.
Yeah.
So Twin Peaks is the show where we talk about the show Twin Peaks.
There we go.
And we talk about it, and today we're doing Season 2,
Episode 1.
It's been a long break. I'm tired of minisodes, and I'm really happy to be back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Same.
I'm excited.
Absolutely.
Who are you?
What?
Who are you?
Oh, man, I love it. You're doing me.
Ah.
I'm your host, Michael, and with me I got... Who else is here?
This is your co-host and co-pilot, Kyle. Cheers.
This is your failed co-host, Rusha... What's up, guys?
What up? Is that your last name?
Yeah, my last name is... What do you think it was?
I did not know how to pronounce it like that.
It's okay. I thought your name was legitimately for like 6 months to being Facebook friends with you until Kyle said, no, it's he just thinks he's funny. And
hey, Kyle, we're going to have to bleep out that stuff, okay?
Yep. Yeah, we haven't done last names on the show.
Oh, we haven't?
No.
Oh, yeah. Please definitely bleep that. That's going to be awesome. Oh, man.
Yeah, and I'll also bleep out your last name.
Oh,
wait, Rusha, should we keep your last name in it, or is there no point of removing your last name?
Go ahead and bleep it just for consistency, because I don't want it to seem like, you know.
Okay. I can do that.
Yeah.
I already have a drop and everything for it.
I prefer creating more work for Kyle.
Have you ever met anyone named Rusha as well?
Oh, yeah. I mean, in America, I know, like, one other person personally has a name, but I know a bunch of people, like, tangentially through my family, and, like, there's tons of Rushas in India, but, like, you know.
Right.
And to be fair, it's the second most populous country on the planet, and will be the most populous in, like, 5 years, so... Technically, there's way more Rushams than Michaels or Kyles, so...
Oh, totally. Yeah. I mean, there was a ton of Indian-American kids at my school, like 20%, 15 to 20%.
Yeah, yeah.
And I didn't know a single Rusham, so...
It's not the most common one. It's not like Sanjay or, like, you know...
Jeff.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, Jeff. That's a good one.
Yeah.
Anyways, continuing on Twin Peaks. let's get into it.
Yeah.
I'm really excited to talk about this again because we're re-recording this episode.
Should we do the summary?
You get on. And Rusha, just for like the consistency of the show, if we like disagree with someone on something, we can still pretend to be surprised. Like what? You know what I mean?
As in this. This isn't the second time we've re-recorded this, or. The first time we've re-recorded this, second time recording it.
Oh, I absolutely will, because my rage never dies, so.
Sure.
Okay, great. So just, cool. Anyways, we could take this out, but let's leave it at.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Yeah.
So much to talk about. There's so much. I'm so excited. Mm-hmm. Can we start off with the short summary?
Yeah,
please,
it
Kyle.
Is by far the longest summary I've written, and I'll try to get through it quick because I have
In
not
fact,
shortened it.
I actually think it's long enough that you should cut some of it.
I can't on the fly, so buckle up.
All right. Okay.
Cooper encounters the least helpful hotel employee of all time, as well as a strange guest, more Horn Blackie drama. Audrey doesn't have sex with her dad. Coop survived thanks to his bureau-mandated vest. Jacques Renault's bag is somehow smiling. Ronette Pulaski's fixing to wake up. Maddie's still around and is having weird dreams / visions. Leland's sporting a new do. The Twin Peaks Police Department investigates Leo's place when a surprise visitor makes his return from Philly, and Andy's hijinks reveal some clues. Donna and Maddie get a new clue about the Meals on Wheels program. Leah's crossed off the list for Teresa Banks's murder. You know, the girl who was killed in Montana before Laura. Oh, you didn't. The one-armed man comes in to talk. James tells Truman more about Laura. Cooper tries mending Andy and Lucy's relationship over a monotonous and salacious task. Jacoby gets questioned. Laura achieved enlightenment. Renault's strangler smelled of scorched engine oil. Bobby sees Shelley and Continues to be the best. Coop checks in with Ed and Nadine. Renault's bag is finally smiling. Pete doesn't like the hospital's food. Garland's back zen as ever thanks to a vision he had in his sleep. Coop lays out the events of Laura's last night. Josie's missing? Who gives a shit? Catherine's still racist. At large, though. Another minority character gets introduced. The Horns and Hank get their evil on. Audrey's six-month evaluation does not go well. Donna joins Meals on Wheels, which Norma apparently runs. Wait, what the fuck? Harriet is still alive. Oh my god. Harriet reads a super inappropriate poem about Laura to Laura's parents. Leland tries to save the dinner party. Coop recounts his weird day to Diane. Audrey calls out for a special agent. Cooper is visited yet again by the giant. Ronette Pulaski finally wakes up, and the Hayward sister plays off the show. There you go.
Nice, nice, oh my nice. God.
Yeah. That was so much longer than it needed to be.
No, I mean, it's an hour and like 45-minute episode.
That is one blurb per scene.
I meant that summary.
It's one blurb per scene, man. It'll be half as long at the longest next week. Because this is a dense ep. It's a very dense episode.
Oh. I like that I'm wasting time complaining that took too long.
Oh, that has not been lost on me.
I'm passionate about it.
Mm-hmm. Brevity is the soul of podcasting, clearly.
I want them to rhyme more.
So the first category, Kyle.
I'm the guy who does the categories.
Yeah, whatever. Do the first category, Michael.
First, we got weirdest character. Let's start it off with Rusev.
Yes.
Who's the weirdest character?
Oh, man. Last time we did this, I always was usurped, but now I can do it. The weirdest character is, of course, the waiter slash... Well, I can't say the second part of it because it's spoilers. But the waiter who fucking stands there. You can bleep that, too, if you guys don't allow swearing on this, which would be lame. But, it made me so angry. I'm so frustrated by this scene. Coop is just standing there bleeding to death, and he's like, I got your milk here. Why are you lying on the ground there? I hung up the phone for you so you could die. And, you know, and I'm almost like, Coop, don't be so nice to this guy. He's a freak.
It was so silly. It was such a Twin Peaks
moment. I know.
Moment.
It lasted for like a full 6 or 7 minutes. And I just, every time I see it, I just like, I'm like, you know, it's like you're going about to go down a roller coaster. So like you're just on the edge of your seat, like getting ready to, you know, stand up. And you're just like,
So does it make you feel angry watching this? Did you feel angry one watching
every time,
scene?
Every time. This is the one scene from the show where I'm inevitably just angry or upset. I don't know why. The stupidity of this guy just makes me like just it's almost it crosses the line from to reference another category from Lynch to bad. It's just like too much, man. Too much David right. Lynch. You know,
dude, that's
comb your hair back a little bit more.
The show's that effective. I did not. I was just like, oh, it's silly.
It's a personal thing for me. It's just there's probably more Lynchian moments in the show that I enjoy. It's just that I think it's because of my overwhelming love for Coop and my worry that he would like just die there. Even though he wouldn't die, I'm just like, help him, you moron.
Yeah.
It made me so happy to take a potential character death not seriously at all. I was like, yeah, we're really going to stick in the middle. It's like in the finale for season 2 of Silicon Valley, where they delete some... He's trying to tell them not to delete this big file, and he's running home. And they make it go like 10 minutes long of like them being like, hey, we should have a beer before we delete the file. And
yeah,
I don't know. Have you guys seen it?
I know that it's the show that airs before Game of Thrones. So, no.
Kyle, you watch Silicon Valley?
I tried watching a couple of episodes, but just, I don't know, didn't get into it.
No shit. Okay, I'm explaining something that you guys aren't going to get. You should see it.
Isn't that Packy in it?
Who?
Isn't that Packy in it?
The Pakistani man.
You're going to keep Packy in there, otherwise I want my whole presence out of this show out.
Kyle, I'm pretty sure that's a slur.
Is it?
I don't think it is.
I've never heard it used. I don't know if it's a slur, but the way you said it made me very uncomfortable.
To be fair, it's probably not a slur, but it is when someone of Indian descent says it. So.
Yeah. Hey, Kyle, can you please bleep all instances...
let's think about these. What other slurs can we level at the Pakistani people?
Even if it,
well, all the slurs point, that can be leveled against them could also be leveled against me as an Indian. So like that's like the one specific to them. So no others.
I'm gonna say even if he says Pakistani, we should bleep that.
Well, that's just you being white and terrible.
Just erasing his culture.
I feel like Paki is way too accurate to be offensive.
That's It sounds so. It's
to be fair, Kyle. To be fair, Kyle. Jap is also like just as offensive, and also accurate. So I mean,
very true. Guys, let's get into it.
Kyle, even if you don't bleep it out, I'm the one uploading the file. I will put bleeps in.
We'll see.
You're never going to hear Rufus's voice or his name. Just tons of bleeps.
I'll bleep out his first name and leave his last name.
All right. Next person.
Yeah.
Anyways. Mine was the same.
Huh?
I totally agreed with Rushab.
Yeah.
Kyle, as host, should I try to choose someone who isn't the one that we're talking about?
If you want to, I feel like it's difficult when there are three people. I feel like we should give ourselves leeway when there are three. If it's just the two of us, then we should do different. But three people,
Kyle, that's a good point. Yeah. Good point. I'm going to agree with you completely then, because he's absolutely the weirdest character. He doesn't come back. I'm thinking of the giant.
Well,
it was such a weird scene.
Kyle, shut up.
And it was probably too long. It should have been shorter.
Nope.
But yeah, Kyle, who do you got?
Same guy.
Yeah. Oh, man. The scene is so good / bad / infuriating.
All three of us. I feel like someone disagreed last time when we did this.
I might have tried to find someone else.
I think you might have said the giant.
Maybe.
I'm remembering you saying the giant.
I think you said the giant, right?
Oh, maybe I did.
Yeah, because
maybe I said the giant.
Right.
Wait. Hold on. There's a bunch of things we need to talk about. The old guy, which is the thumbs up. I'm giving you guys thumbs up.
Thank you.
I'm giving a thumbs up to my computer.
Right.
And I assume you're doing the same.
Oh, of course. I've been doing it for the past 14 minutes.
Here? That's weird. But right. Okay.
No.
Yeah, but I had to pause my Netflix when I was watching it, and I unpaused it to keep watching it, and I thought it skipped because I saw another thumbs up sequence. But nope, there's just like four thumbs up in a row.
So
that's like bad.
Oh yeah, what I like to think is that so this is all shot on film, right? So in the editing bay, it would have to be done. Like manually stitched together, right?
Yeah.
Do you think? I like to think that started off as an error of editing, and then David Lynch just liked it too much. It was like, no, you know what? This is perfect. Leave them both in, or keep it.
Yeah, it seems like an intentional David Lynch thing.
Yeah, I know way too much about him to like disagree with that assessment.
Yeah, like he's like, let's just do this to fuck with people, just like in Louis, when they had that with the episode featuring David Lynch, when we saw they changed actresses who played the secretary.
Yeah. There's also the episode.
There's precedent for that, though. They change both races and actresses of women who play his wife too. So yep. Even though they have children.
Yeah. No, but they do this in the same scene between two different
that's
shots.
That's true. Yeah, that's a good moment.
Which. It couldn't be an accident, you know?
Right. It had to be intentional.
It's them intentionally being weird, right. Which I love.
Yeah, of course.
Anyways, let's move on to...
Weirdest scene,
mm-hmm. Which, not to be repetitive, but the opening scene with the thumbs up guy.
Yep. Would you isolate the thumbs up portion as the weirdest part of it?
Oh, yeah, that specific, we literally just talked about it. That whole thing is an intentionally weird thing to do.
Yeah.
It's gimmicky. It's so weird that it's gimmicky.
I'm going to agree, even though I think it's tied with the second moment, but I'm going to save that for worst acting. So, yeah, I agree with Michael.
Okay.
Kyle, what do you got?
Yeah, same thing. It's one of those indisputable, just weird-ass moments. So
yeah, man,
and it lasts for like way too minutes. Long, so you can't like not mention it.
Totally, it is the focal point of that episode, without a doubt.
Let's keep going, moving on to Batter David Lynch, mm-hmm. Which I guess that's again that scene could be
it's a contender.
Well, But I don't think anyone would say it's bad. That one could be like Mistake or David Lynch.
I think it's just David Lynch or extremely right. David Lynch is really the thing. Yeah. Like that's that scene epitomizes his both directorial and producing style. Just that scene in and of itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but Bad or David Lynch works. I think it's best for a scene where if someone else, I can imagine someone else doing that exact same scene. Trying to be like a funny comedy and it not working.
Oh,
and we're only giving him a pass because he's David.
So okay, I got one here too.
So mine is Andy getting hit in the head by a floorboard because I can imagine seeing that scene in like a fucking Dumb and Dumber movie and being upset about it.
Oh, thank you for hating those movies, though. By the way, thank you for hating those movies. By the way,
I don't.
Oh, never mind. Fuck you then. All right.
I kind of like elements of the first one. I wouldn't call myself a fan, though.
Okay. Cal, you hate them, right?
Yeah, I can imagine that exact scene in a Dumb and Dumber movie and it not being funny. But in this case, I can imagine people watching and be like, whoa, David Lynch is so good. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I was at this hipster bar in Logan Square last night. Where they do like Twin Peaks on every Tuesday or whatever like that and watch an episode. So I'm probably going to go to that.
You should,
hipsters loving Twin Peaks.
Make sure it's not a spoiler episode for you.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Also, fun fact, I'm going to go ahead and apologize to listeners right now. I just realized that my mic settings were off, so the first half of this episode is probably going to sound real bad on my end, but I've switched it back, so audio quality should be restored.
Just a note to our listeners, don't forgive Kyle. He's the worst, and hate him for that forever. All right, go ahead.
No.
Moving on.org.
Jesus.
Who else has Bad or David Lynch? Who else has Wampin a Bad or David Lynch?
Oh, I do. What? Kyle, do you want to go or should I go?
Kyle, don't like make a joke and then quote what it's from like 8 seconds later.
I just want to make sure that people know that I'm not stealing that bit.
Then what are you doing?
I'm giving credit where credit's due.
Don't do someone else's bit.
It happens. And I'm not passing it off as my own.
Okay.
God damn it. Bad or David Lynch. Let's do this.
All right. Do you want to go first, Kyle, or should I?
Yeah, I'm doing this.
Okay.
I already went first.
Did you?
Yeah. I said,
I know you did. I'm just saying before me.
Yeah. Wait on. Let's talk about the Andy getting in the head a little bit more, just in a more general sense.
Right.
What did you guys think of that scene?
Oh, I thought it was just. Oh my god. I thought it was classic David Lynch. He walks into it what 3 times before they discover the contents beneath the board. Correct.
Was it 3 times or twice?
I don't know.
It was a very drawn out scene because they were walking towards the FBI agents and just. Yeah. I mean, I thought I don't want to say brilliant because that makes me sound like a hipster, but I appreciated it way more. I wasn't angry like I was in the first scene that we referred to, so.
Yeah, can you do that one more time and reference Neutral Milk Hotel as well?
As in not being a hipster?
No, that way you'll get the full hipster vibe of, one, saying something in Twin Peaks is brilliant, two, saying that you're not a hipster, and three,
professing love of Neutral Milk Hotel.
Yeah, was that a terrible joke?
No, it was good. Except I'm definitely not a
hipster.
Yeah, I'm definitely not a hipster though. So,
sure. I like that Rushim saying it's not a bad joke. It kind of is like, yeah, it's a bad joke.
I feel like if
I appreciate the feedback.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can we edit it out?
Moving on.
No. Let's not edit it out.
Bad or David Lynch. You gotta go with the Andy's goddamn Tex Avery routine, as I wrote in my notes.
Oh, Tex Avery, yeah, it's so right. It's so dumb and he's hopping around and
now
like.
So as far as the nature of the segment goes, you know, Bad or David Lynch, if it's bad, right, then it's David Lynch, basically being enthusiastically. He enthusiastically thinks that's funny. Like, he doesn't do so ironically. Yeah. If it's...
I love that we're having a meta discussion on what better David Lynch should be.
This many episodes into your goddamn podcast, too.
In this particular scene, it's interesting because it's either David Lynch legitimately finding that scene funny, or it's David Lynch essentially using that scene as kind of like an, I guess, ironic sense.
Like an anti-humor thing?
Wait, right, where it's like...
Why are we dismissing the fact that he could just be on drugs? Like, I don't see why that's like something we consider as a third possibility.
I think David Lynch is... does he do psychotropics?
It doesn't... I know he's in transcendental meditation.
Yeah, that's not the same thing.
Wait. No, you could totally do mushrooms and me into transcendental medication at the same time.
Right.
It probably aids your ability to do that.
I'm not saying he doesn't. I'm saying I haven't really heard of anything that ties him together with that.
But I don't think that's... The question is, do we think that David Lynch is trying to be funny with this scene?
Yeah, is he trying to be sincerely funny, or is he trying to, like, ironically be funny and use this trope of this just way over-the-top physical routine to convey the idiocy of...
Did irony exist in 1990?
Yeah, no, what? Here's the thing. Any David Lynch...
Did irony...
It did. First of all, yes. Second of all David Lynch great. Humor is ironic. There's no legitimate humor that he does. It's all irony based. That's his. Can we just state that? I mean, he doesn't do like regular humor. He only does irony based humor or surrealism humor. Like, he doesn't do regular humor.
I don't know if that's true.
Except for possibly this scene. That's the thing.
Wait, no. This
scene
is totally
like straight
ironic,
up a
though.
Physical comedy gag.
Yeah, but it's entirely a referential one. Like you said, it's Tex Avery,
right.
Almost Three Stooges, almost Wile E. Coyote level, just nonsensical humor. It's absolutely
right.
No way for someone of his, you know, auteur, art house fucking background, a serious, you know, wager at humor. It's just ironic.
Dude, it's... I don't know. To suddenly, he's never done parody before, and suddenly he's like a parody. Twin Peaks is a parody.
It's always been a parody. It's a parody of a soap opera.
That's a good point. It's a decent. It's both.
It's kind of like I'm missing a good reference here, but there are shows that are both, you know, like Cabin in the Woods. It's both a horror and a parody of horror. That's what
right.
This is. It's both a soap opera and a parody of soap opera.
Yeah.
It does both well.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know. What do you think, Kyle?
I mean, yeah, that's the... Yeah. I still can kind of go either... Like, the... If I were to assume the best of the show, and I typically do, I'm on board with that interpretation of it as being this ironic juxtaposition of this... really broad physical comedy in a kind of serious show, you know, a serious
yeah.
show that just happens to be weird a lot.
Oh, absolutely. You're right. It is a very serious yeah. show.
Right. Like, even if sometimes they fail to convey that sometimes.
I don't know. Those donut stacks yeah. always make me, you know, bring me back down to reality.
Right. Just induce tears.
Oh, I get so hungry. When those seals
but so Rushab, do you have a different Bad or David Lynch scene?
I absolutely do. I'm so glad you asked me because I've been waiting for that because I love hearing myself talk. You guys recall, of course, the scene where the sheriff is questioning. I'm sorry, I'm forgetting his name right now.
James.
Yes.
Yeah.
And Biker James
let's,
is just.
Let's get started
oh
on that
my
scene.
Gosh. That scene is just so amazing yet terrible because James is like, he's trying to be like so dramatic. Like, obviously crossing into melodrama, but like he's trying to be a good actor, but he's just not executing that well.
I'll drop this bomb on you again.
Yep.
I think he was good. I think he was good in the episode. I think he's a good actor.
Oh, I'm not saying he's a bad actor. I'm just saying,
well,
he has that.
We've said he's a bad actor many times.
Yeah. He's suddenly a great actor. He must have went to Juilliard in between seasons.
See, now I'm just questioning everything you guys believe in.
Yeah, and he became like the superstar actor. He must have done like a Whiplash style course.
Was he in anything after this? I don't think he was. I think he just kind of fizzled out into nothingness.
This was so my tempo.
No, but like the recording that the listeners don't know that we're referencing, I'll have to point out that I think to clarify what you're saying, it's not so much that he's a good actor in the scene. He is a markedly improved actor.
Yeah, I think he's much better.
I think he delivers the Lynchian style just flawlessly here, but it's bad.
Lynchian style. What do you mean by Lynchian
style? It's like surrealism. It's like where it takes melodrama and just molds it into like this surreal universe that they've already crafted, you know, for a whole season, and just
yeah,
like
I don't think that changes his performance.
Well, I think it colors his performance pretty like importantly. I mean, he's playing into this directional mandate that he would have been put on by Lynch.
I don't think David Lynch is telling people to be more like Lynchian.
Well, no, he's not telling them to be. He's not
be more like me.
No, he's telling them to act a certain.
Be more like
he's
me.
Giving
more
them.
Like I can't me. Be David Lynch.
If any of us could,
I just realized I can't be David Lynch.
If any of us could specifically say what he directorially told to his actors, we wouldn't be doing a podcast. We'd be doing his job. No, I mean,
no, we'd still be doing this.
Fair enough. But my point being that, you know, he's giving them direction to give them a certain, you know, to match his style. And that's why I'm saying he's played into that very well in this scene. But it's also just, what the F? In my opinion, like, he's staring into the camera just, and the musical tone, like, he was just so, you know, it's the Twin Peaks theme. And it's just like, it's crescendoing and he's like being dramatic. It's just, oh, it's like a beautiful disaster, a beautiful train wreck. I love it. And I also like just, oh, I cringe at it. I love it. This whole it epitomizes what I enjoy with the show. Loving something and then cringing at it simultaneously.
Right. Mike?
Yeah. Kyle, is this supposed to be a parody? This is all I can think about now.
He wasn't listening to what I said at all, but, you know, comment
Who
on
are
that.
You? no, I, like, I wouldn't, as Richard was saying, I would never go so far as to say that the show is a parody, period.
Yeah.
You would definitely really need to qualify that, but there's elements of it for sure. Like, even just structurally, it borrows so much from a soap opera. Like, clearly it's either trying to be one, but it could also just be David Lynch trying to do a soap opera.
I think it's David Lynch trying to do a soap opera.
Can we call it intentionally constructed hyperbole? Like, not parody, but it's a heightened sense of reality based on a genre that was very prevalent at the time.
Maybe.
I don't know if you'd say heightened sense if you mean surreal, but
I think heightened sense matches surreal fairly. I don't know.
I thought they were opposites.
Good question here. I'll say about my own question that I'm about to ask. Rushab, have you seen other David Lynch things?
No. I've watched the Cleveland Show.
Yeah, I mentioned that in like the first season.
Yeah,
he did a voice on that show for some goddamn reason.
Wait, he Lynch?
Yeah, he's the bartender. He is himself as the bartender.
Well, technically, his character's name is Gus, but he looks exactly like David Lynch animated.
Yeah. Exactly.
So is it essentially like their version of Adam West?
Yeah, pretty much.
That's a fair way of saying it. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. But like, if you were to, so I think now I have the most David Lynch under my belt of anyone here. So I've got Blue Velvet, Mulholland Drive, Twin Peaks, and then kind of Eraserhead.
I haven't finished anything David Lynch has ever done.
well, to be fair, for Twin Peaks,
Kyle,
at the very
I wanted to watch Eraserhead, but then you told me the plot, like, during a 30-minute car ride, like almost scene by scene. And
oh yeah, because you said you weren't going to watch it.
Yeah, exactly. So after you started scripting, I'm like, okay, fine.
Right. Yeah. But where I'm going with this, both as a backdoor brag, and also to kind of qualify what I'm about to say, I think it could be easily argued, especially because like I just recently watched Blue Velvet, and I think that really is where David Lynch is kind of at his height of still being David Lynch, but
his
also
magnum opus, if you
movies.
Will.
What?
His magnum opus, if you will.
Right. Yeah. And like with that, I'm not sure if you can really say like, so to viewers, it is a hyperbolic, somewhat of a parody of soap operas. To David Lynch, it just might be his aesthetic, which does span this gamut of being very reserved, like your James characters, and like kind of even your Audrey characters to some extent, but like James really epitomizes this like stoicism of some of his characters and like aloofness. And then it goes way on the other end of your Sarah Palmers and in Blue Velvet, like a Dennis Hopper, who's just like this ball of insanity that you're kind of subjected to. But that movie's not really a parody. That's just kind of David Lynch's aesthetic. And it might just be that he's just bringing his aesthetic to a soap opera, but it's not intended. He doesn't intend it to be hyperbolic. It's just his his take on it, which to us happens to be hyperbolic.
That's a fair interpretation. Yeah. It's very hard to nail down exact. I feel like it's always shifting, but you know, I think that's as close to a thesis statement for a series as you could get.
Yeah, it's also weird because Mike hasn't gotten to these episodes yet. When we get into the back half of season two, when David Lynch gets hands off, because then when you start talking about the series as a whole, you still kind of have to factor in that pretty significant chunk of episodes where it's tonally off a little bit. Yeah, and I won't go into any more detail than that. But
Michael, finish the show, damn it.
It's fun to have him go through it.
It's impossible for me to get to the show to the end at this point.
Okay.
Should we move on to worst police work?
That's like complaining that I'm like only halfway through a marathon when I'm running a marathon and I'm halfway there.
It's almost like that, except not. But go ahead and continue with the next section, Cal.
That was a bad analogy. You can take it out.
I'm taking none of this out.
Yeah. Including the whole thing about Pakistanis.
Oh, please.
Just edit out everything except me telling you to edit stuff out?
Yes. You know, at the end of the series, I should try to go back and like find a supercut of all of your edits.
A supercut of me telling you to edit stuff out.
It would probably last an hour.
Yeah. Oh, I like that.
Yeah.
Worst police work. Let's do it.
Yeah. Thanks for moving us on. Yeah. I'm having fun though. We're talking about like what runs deeper in Twin Peaks. You
absolutely.
Know? Like,
this is what this podcast was supposed to be. Damn it.
we talk about every episode. Do you want to stop doing that?
No.
Okay. So worst police work, I would say Andy running into a flipping board. Multiple times, and then inadvertently, he didn't discover it. Coop did, because Coop's the best.
Right. Super cop.
Yep. The hidden evidence, the boots that were referenced so prolifically before, underneath that board. That would be the worst police work, I think, because Coop's not a cop. He's a federal agent. So that was just local cops just being bumpkins and morons.
Right.
But you guys go ahead and.
Yeah,
make Mike? Your own prediction.
I mean, worst police work includes everybody.
Yeah, any law enforcement agent.
Yeah.
So in theory, Albert could be a nominated for worst.
But
police
Albert's
work, but
always on
happen.
Point. Albert's always on point.
Yeah.
Yeah, that Albert. No, on Albert. My one of my favorite parts of the episode is the opposite of worst police work, and that's when he's talking. Using the stethoscope on Coop and immediately knows the height of the person that shot him and all these very specific details.
Yeah, right.
That was such a good joke. That's a really solid joke. That makes me feel like David Lynch is going for straight up comedy. Like, cause that's a really funny joke.
Right.
But considering how many things that exact same doctor, who is, Susan Boyle's dad in that show, just got
not Susan Boyle.
Not Susan Boyle, but what's her name?
Lara Flynn Boyle.
Lara Flynn Boyle. Susan Boyle is a totally different woman.
A dream that would never die.
Yes, Lara Flynn Boyle. Her dad. He just totally gets so many things wrong. And then he's just like, yeah, you're shot with this guy at this height, at this range, and without even like actually doing any forensic analysis or no time taken whatsoever.
He just needs to touch his stomach and hear him breathe.
Yep.
Yeah. Let's see. Wait, but Mike, you didn't have a worst police work.
I wrote to Andy being very, very stupid human being and just like.
So your worst police work is just Andy the character.
Yeah. The fact that he exists, yes. I wish Andy wasn't in the show.
Oh, he is kind of a real piece of shit. I kind of want him to die every time I see him.
Like all that baby stuff makes me dislike him. But it's not like Joffrey, who I dislike, and he's like good for the show. I just think he's just there and he's not interesting.
Right. I do find his like relationship with the secretary. I'm forgetting her name at the moment, but
Lucy.
Yeah, she's just. It's funny at times. Other times, I'm just like, get back to Donut Stacks. Get back to Donut Stacks. Oh, I hate you both.
You're telling both of them to get back to Donut Stacks because Andy should.
Andy
not be in the
is
field.
Not good at anything, police work wise. I mean, he throws up the sight of dead bodies and like cries like. He's just pathetic. I want to be hit by a truck, and that would be the funniest scene in the show. But I have to wait for the next season for that.
Right. I just if Andy, there was a scene where Andy got hit by a truck, it'd be really slapsticky and stupid.
Whatever said. Goes out how he lived.
But I would want him to die at the end. I would want him to die at the end.
But you'd like Andy. But the way Andy would die is if he like slipped on a banana peel and. Fell off a cliff for like 4 minutes. It'd be super hokey. I just want him to.
It'd
be
like that scene
show.
From Hot Rod where he falls down a hill for like a 5 minute scene. Yeah. Except he dies at the end.
Yeah, but imagine that, but without the energy of Hot Rod, where it's literally just a guy falling down a hill.
If he is suffering graphically the whole time, I will be fine.
Yeah, it would last 10 minutes, real time.
I think it's fair to say that. David Lynch, while he can write funny stuff, I don't think it's always like it's like the funniest scene in this episode isn't that funny of a joke.
No.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, he's not a comedy director at all.
Is that everyone for worst police work?
I have one here. Actually a different one, not Andy. You have to give Andy credit, even though it was totally by accident and very slapstick. He got results, you know? He got results. But my worst police work is actually involves Dale Cooper. he goes to Sheriff Truman and requests a warrant based on his meeting with the giant in his dream. And his only basis for that meeting is that his ring is gone. That's it.
Yeah. On the other hand,
I mean, I get that.
Also, you don't request warrants from sheriffs; you request them from judges. So that entire scene is kind of moot when you think about it.
Yeah, it could be like pass this along to the local judge.
No, he's a federal agent. He would have much better. I mean. If he passed it on to the district judge, which would be a federal district, he'd have a much better chance at getting it passed than siphoning it through a local sheriff who would then pass it to a local district judge who wouldn't even have the authority because this is a cross-jurisdictional case from both this area, another area which the FBI is involved, and even to a certain extent the Canadian jurisdiction across the border.
The Mounties?
Yeah. Sorry, go ahead. Whatever you're going
to
say.
Yeah, so there's that even, too. He doesn't even know who to submit a warrant request to.
No. I mean, I think Kyle actually nailed it here. I totally missed that despite being a law student. So,
yeah.
Grats to Kyle.
It didn't bother me that much.
I mean, within the logic of a show, it's totally something that can slide. And within the logic of Twin Peaks, which is not heavy on, like, factual police work... It can slide, but if you were to step back objectively and use real-world standards on it, not great.
Yeah.
Follow-up, I also want to point out, during the James interrogation with Sheriff Truman, James offers literally no defense to Sheriff Truman other than, you know it's not me. And Sheriff Truman's like, all right, guy, I got it.
Exactly.
You got there's this planted evidence.
He's a bookhouse boy. He's a bookhouse boy, Kyle.
Dude, that scene made that line, the way James delivered that, made me be like, oh, shit, what good acting. Because I think he delivered the line until it was like, you know, it's not me. I don't know. I thought it was very convincingly.
I'm not saying it's not a bad line. I'm saying it's bad police work on Sheriff Truman's part. Because, he cannot account for that cocaine, whether it being there or not being there, nor can he provide, any sort of evidence saying that it's not his.
There's no third party verification. Obviously, it's like most of the police work in this series, which is just like, it's steeped in nepotism and just cultural just nonsense. Like, oh, I know you, you're a bookhouse boy, or I know you, you're et cetera. You're this person who's important in the community, yeah. Or I know you and I know you're, you know, you have a reputation in the community, et cetera, et cetera. You know,
it's a trial by viewership. It really appeals to the viewers' inclinations and the viewers' knowledge. Like, the Twin Peaks, like, the police department's really not going to act in opposition to where the viewers, like, what the viewers believe to be right and wrong, mm-hmm. I think, mm-hmm. in the show. And so, obviously, we know that Bobby planted it. They just didn't really do their due diligence of finding James a more believable way out. But since we already know that James is innocent, they're not going to have Sheriff Truman. It's just not that kind of show if Sheriff Truman were to be like, oh, when we're locking you away and you're a huge disappointment to your family and all of that, because it's not about him.
Exactly. See, in an episode that already... sorry, go ahead.
I totally justified it in my head. I was like, oh, he trusts him so much.
This is why
so
you're
close.
Not a cop.
I'm saying for storytelling purposes. I'm not saying it's lazy storytelling.
Yeah, no, and for sure, I totally agree with you on that.
Well, I thought you were saying it was lazy.
No, it's suspension of disbelief. It works. Yeah. That's why you can't always pick. I'm not trying to be like a defensive Michael Bay sort of. You can't pick apart stuff. I mean, there's a limit, obviously, but like there's always suspension of disbelief, and I think this is a fair usage of that because these two guys are in cahoots on every level. Essentially, they're not going to go into an already almost 2-hour episode. It was 2 hours when it aired, most likely because of ads. You're not going to go into vetting a character who's already been established for a season and a half as a good guy, especially in a show that isn't 24 or Game of Thrones or something where it's like, oh, but they're evil all of a sudden. You know, it's not that kind of show.
Yeah. Oh. Anyways, moving on.
Actually, hold on. Can I sidebar this for some fun facts that I actually kind of want to act on maybe in future episodes?
Hey, Rushib, can we get a sidebar?
Yeah, I don't own this show, so yeah, go ahead. Do what you guys want to do.
No, I wanted a lawyer's perspective.
I don't think that matters.
Can I approach the bench?
Sure. Thank you. Go ahead.
All right, thank you. So apparently when the show initially aired, so you're talking about runtime, apparently, when the show initially aired, they had introductory segments filmed by the log lady, which introduced every episode. But they didn't include it for the Netflix release for some reason.
Hmm. I bet those are on YouTube, though.
Yeah, that's why I'm thinking maybe for a future episode we dip into those. Because
that's a brilliant idea. Yeah.
So how long is each one?
I don't think they're very long. Probably maybe like a minute or something. It's just kind of her cryptically introducing what might happen in this episode or like what you might want to think about in this episode.
No, that's brilliant. Yeah, because that dips into how culturally important this show was. It was like the biggest show
Log Lady introductions.
Of like 3 years was the biggest show on television. So
yeah, no, it's she's just in an armchair holding her log and like just introduces the episode.
They had Log Lady introductions for season one as well.
Yeah, it was the entire series, I think.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah,
I'm upset. I didn't know these. I want to watch all of them.
They just didn't include them on Netflix, which is how we're watching them.
We need to incorporate them more into the show. I wish you would have told me about this.
Yeah, I'm guessing they'd be on a. I just found out about it like a month ago, maybe.
Wow, I'm surprised you didn't know.
Yeah,
it's hard to know because we've known the series only through the modern era. So
we're all 17. Yeah.
We were all born like when this series like aired, essentially.
Yep.
I was not born when it started.
I was born in 89, so.
Yep. Yeah. So you were born at least during pre-production.
Well, November of 89, so I think it started airing in 89, so right.
I was born at like 90. In late December of 90, so I definitely was not.
Mike's a youngin.
Yeah. But it aired until 2002, right?
What?
No, 2001. I'm sorry, 1991.
There you go.
I got it eventually.
It lasted 12 seasons.
You should run for president with that kind of accuracy, man.
Sure.
12 seasons, 18 movies.
Yeah, it's like Frasier.
You wish.
should we keep this moving? Maybe best music cue?
Yeah, we're already at like 48 minutes, so let's.
Yeah, nice. I was gonna say, Kyle, there was so much new music in this.
Yeah.
And I want you to talk about it. And this is gonna give me a great opportunity to talk about a favorite scene of mine. So please.
Right. Well, so yeah, best music cue. I'm gonna have to go with Leland's rendition of "Get Happy" at the the dinner party scene. Just any,
so good.
Yeah, any God. Leland show tune opportunity is a good one.
My God,
we haven't even mentioned so far yet Leland Palmer's new hairdo and Leland Palmer in general.
Right. Silver Fox.
Once we get through the bits, we should go through our notes for the rest of the episode too, because there's so much that we, like, even our bits don't cover.
So much.
Yeah. Are we calling them bits now?
Oh, yeah. Okay. They're segments. Whatever.
Okay, yeah.
I was, like, super, super happy with his character. I loved it. He's him killing the person who he thinks killed his daughter.
Yeah.
Has taken all his sadness away from him, and he's now this like puppy dog of happiness.
Yeah.
He used to dance and cry, and now he like sings and is so happy.
But what's weird though too is like at the dinner party too, because he starts, you know, singing the song and he's like,
and he passes out
and he keeps accelerating it. And then he kind of just, like, falls apart, too.
Oh, see, I thought it was he was so excited that he just wanted to see how much energy he had. And he passed out, and he woke up, and he was like, that was crazy, wasn't it?
You got to watch his wife's reaction. And I know it's difficult to persuade you to do because his wife is insane. But he's also insane.
Oh, no, she's
so,
I've got my eyes on her the whole time because every scene she's in, I'm probably looking at her the whole time because – her reaction to Leland Palmer is so sad because she's falling apart and then her husband's happy?
Yeah.
Without saying too much, I think you should read more into it because it's revealing. So.
Interesting.
She's a good one to watch.
Okay. I need to watch her more. Interesting. I love it. And then there's also the scene with him. With Ben and Jerry. Actually, let's talk about that later.
Yep. Sure.
I want to talk about a great music cue, which is Hot Donna's theme song.
Sunglasses, Hot Donna. Oh. Mm-hmm.
It's very similar to like the Cooper theme, but it's much sexier.
Oh yeah.
Well, it's Donna.
And Donna's hot.
Oh man.
Donna's hot.
Can
now.
We just say that almost all sure the young high school women are incredibly attractive. Sorry, disclaimer. They're all in their mid-20s. I'm not a pervert.
They're all aged down.
Yeah. But they're all just incredibly attractive, especially Donna and Audrey Horne topping the list, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
She's intentionally...
She's
intentionally like a Marilyn Monroe-style 50s, 60s sort of, seductress.
You guys are starting a Jared Fogle podcast, right?
Yeah.
Is that happening?
Brought to you by Subway. 50s, Eat so. Fresh. $5.
Yeah. You know about the sex crimes that he's committed, right, Rishab?
Oh no, I mean I'm just talking about $5 footlongs, bro.
Oh, okay.
Oh, I shouldn't have brought. Why did I bring up the stupidest current reference?
You really dated
so
it.
Sorry.
No, but we've discussed at length that David Lynch he must have a thing for sexualizing high school women.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
We've talked about it enough that it's actually not worth talking about right now.
All right. Well, then we'll continue. I will just fantasize about Audrey Horne later. Continue.
Yeah. But we're talking about Donna right now. She like bites his finger.
Yep.
She walks in so sexy that someone whistles.
She smokes a cig indoors.
But it was 1990.
We gotta set the scene.
She comes to the police department and someone whistles because she's so sexy.
Even though there's no one in the police department, let's remember that too.
I wrote good directing in my notes, which probably is not accurate. it might be though.
Objectifying
I thought it was fun,
directing.
But there's literally a like 6-minute long scene that only establishes that Donna is sexy now. That's literally all it does.
Yeah, well, and it's also, but we have to remember why she's sexy now.
She's been possessed by glasses of Laura Palmer and her sexiness. Yeah. I'm not even screwing with you. That's what it is.
That's exactly what I want to talk about. That's exactly what happened.
I did not interpret it that way.
Well, she, like...
Are you spoiling this? At this point?
No, we talked about this in the last recording, too.
It isn't a possession, but it's like... She's gained some of her
joie de vivre.
Yeah, she's like adopting the persona of Laura, kind of, by putting on the glasses. She kind of like feels liberated in the way that Laura was, that she doesn't feel like she is, and that allows her to be hot Donna, quote unquote.
I think the point is, I think Lynch is going for, she's literally seeing through her eyes, I think, is the...
That's a good one.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's on the nose, but I think that's what he's going for.
Yeah. I can see that.
Yeah.
Is that how you took it? Mike?
That's how I took it?
Is that how you took it?
Yeah.
If you have a different way to approach it, let us know.
No. I think that's how I think of it.
Great. Rushab, music cues?
Music cues. I know I said something different last time, but when James is being interrogated and the crescendo moves into the Twin Peaks themes as he's like going into, I looked into Laura's eyes and I could just tell, and I'm just like, oh man, the melodrama. It's burning into my soul right now.
It is.
It was so good.
Yeah, that is called.
He's
Laura's
so smart
theme.
Now.
What?
He's so smart now. He's such a good actor.
Should we try to get him on our podcast?
Oh no. I'm afraid it's a fluke.
We're all just like, oh. Maybe.
I like that we're saying that even if he wanted to be on the show, we wouldn't have him on the show.
That's so telling that we're just like, well, we haven't had any celebrities on the show, but if we had the offer.
Yeah, we're somehow too good for it.
Oh, I'm sorry. We're not doing this podcast anymore.
Yeah, we have to start pretending that it's not a thing. Yeah.
We all died of cancer. Right. Anyways.
Yeah. Talking to our ghosts.
Anyways, let's get on to favorite character. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna say my controversial one first, which you guys are gonna yell at me for.
Got to start off. Is Dale Cooper the best character in the show or the episode?
Oh, thank you so much. I almost forgot. Mm-hmm. I'm going with no.
Yeah.
Kyle.
Nope.
Roosh.
Oh man, I'm on the fence, but I'm gonna say no. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So Roosh, who is your favorite character this episode?
My favorite character. It's gonna have to be Albert. Albert just nailed. I don't know. I'm not trying to say I'm always into like the straight man, but when he just shows up, he's like, "What the f, David Blaine? Like, just what are you doing, bro? This is insane."
He's always a solid pick.
Yep,
he's fun.
And then like he's him and his whole thing with Harry S. Truman. My God, that joke will always get me. I don't even care. Yeah. Just
that guy seems like so much fun. Has he been in a Coen Brothers movie? Because I think he would do.
Oh,
like
that actor, I forgot his name. But he's been in a ton of crap. He's in a ton of.
He seems familiar.
He's been in a ton of recent crap. I can't think of it at the moment, but he's prevalent as that guy.
I can picture him in a Coen Brothers movie.
Yeah, absolutely.
Maybe Barton Fink or something.
Yeah, I don't know. One I haven't seen, probably.
Yeah. Pardon.
I was gonna say, going back to Coop this episode, I just wanted to talk about why we didn't choose him as best character. Mm-hmm. Even though he had some good scenes, I think a lot of he just wasn't doing that much this episode.
He kind of had a round in his stomach, so I mean, he was slowed down a bit, so.
Not for long.
Yeah. But I mean, like but I don't think that should make like. In Breaking Bad, when Hank got shot,
spoilers.
Like, what's the why even say that? I already told them what it was. but when Hank got shot, he became the most interesting character by far for a long time.
Yeah.
So I don't think.
I want to say I don't want to disagree with that assessment, because also Kyle was right to call you all on that, because this is a Twin Peaks podcast and you just revealed like season 4 spoilers of a different show that's way more popular and modern.
Oh. The cop guy gets shot. Oh, how, what a spoiler.
To be fair, yeah, he is shot like multiple times.
Yeah.
To be fair.
Yeah.
Good, but
good point.
This is, well, you know what, let's just move on past that. It doesn't matter.
Walt uses meth to save him.
Yes.
Right?
That's exactly what happens.
I'm pretty sure that's
anyways.
What happens. But no, you're right, because I think with this episode, even though it is an hour and a half long, it really has to focus on tying up, or at least continuing a lot of the cliffhangers that were left hanging
which
at the end of last season. And a lot of them
which
don't
they actually did... Huh? They did a good joke about that when Coops wakes up from his 7-hour long coma, or sleeping, as most people call it. And Lucy gives him the rundown of all the different threads that need to be fixed up.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's a very on the nose moment. Yeah,
it was so funny. The episode should have opened with that.
Yeah.
Because it's a really good laugh line.
Well, then you'd have to miss out on that epic. Not 20 minute, but like 15 minute waiter opening scene. That would just
I will not give that up.
Yeah,
this is one of the best episodes of Twin Peaks that I've seen so far.
No, yeah, it's probably one of the best episodes of season 2. Not to like make you look down upon the rest of the season, but I think
I'd be surprised if an episode could top it. It's very, very good.
Mm-hmm. So
Kyle, who's your favorite character?
Yeah. I'm going to go with Big Ed. Big Ed on this one. He's not in it hardly at all, but
he has a emotional monologue.
Yeah. Just anything that really delves deeper into the whole love quadrangle between him, Nadine, Norma, and Hank, right?
Yeah, it's a real messed up quadrangle, so it's a fair point.
Yeah, no. Anything that delves deep into that, it kind of gives him gives him some acting opportunities, which is always good.
He's a good actor. I like him a lot.
Yeah, and it makes that whole like situation less screwed up in our heads. Like, it's very humanizing. I remember watching that and thinking, man, you're a person to me now. So
right.
It was so confusing. If you guys hadn't explained it to me on the last one, I wouldn't have totally understood it. Norma and Nadine have such similar names. It's confusing.
But they're totally different people on every level.
Yeah. Do we think that we should run through that again this time?
No, we're already running long, so.
It's a long story anyways.
But yeah, no, it's like, because I remember when I first watched it, especially since we have this more blasé opinion of divorce, I think, than even in the 1990s.
Yeah, absolutely.
When I first watched it, you know, it's hard to divorce that mentality from their situation and just be like, just get a... What are you doing? It's so easy. Stop seeing these other people. Just get together. But like, especially with all of that complication now, and Ed, you know, feeling guilty for causing her injury, and then also, you know, there is affection there. It's very clear that he has affection for Nadine, even though she's not his high school sweetheart, i.e., Norma. There's still like a love there, even if it might not be as strong as you felt with Norma, but I don't know. It's just very tragic.
I think it's important to not to get too nerdy about it, but you have to remember that no-fault divorce was introduced, you know, in the later Reagan years, essentially like coming up around the late 70s, essentially, you know, when he was governor, he introduced it, but then later more into the, 80s and 90s, and divorce rates, you know, obviously the saying is now almost, and it's not a saying, it's a fact that almost 50% or more marriages end in divorce. Right. Got that twisted there.
50% of divorces start as marriages.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But that became a thing because of no-fault divorce, which was, you know, before that, you know, you had to prove some sort of malice, you know, that you were being beaten, there was infidelity, et cetera, et cetera. Now it's like, well, we just don't like each other, so we can get divorced. And that just...
You don't even need to go that far. Just boom, divorce.
Yeah, exactly.
Sorry, I yawned right into the microphone. I apologize.
I'm sorry, was
not
that me?
Editing it out.
Okay. No, exactly, yeah. So now, and this is like a new concept to them. And in a small town like Twin Peaks, you know, in the American, you know, Northwest, you know, where obviously all sorts of culture is just taking time, just dragging, you know, it's both Lynchian, but it's also realistic in the fact that they're like, well, even though this is a totally ridiculous marriage, we have to stay in it because it's a small town. Yeah. There are expectations.
And even on top of that, it's still playing at being a soap opera in a sense. And in soap operas, you know, they like, if everyone just did the emotionally healthy thing and, you know, stop seeing the people that were not good for them, then there wouldn't be a show. So it's a town that doesn't know divorce.
Yeah.
And it's also a good, it's good drama.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. It's very emotionally conflicting. And
speaking of that quadrant you were talking about, the guy who plays Huey Lewis in the news.
Right. That's Hank for Rushab.
I'm Hank. Rushab, am I crazy or does he look exactly like Huey Lewis?
You're crazy, but yeah, go ahead.
Okay, anyways. I've just been insisting.
He's much more like Morris Day in the time, obviously.
Okay, yeah. Wait, I thought. You're in Minnesota or Minneapolis. Are you? Aren't you now allowed to like Morris Day in the time?
Well, I can only like Prince, but
yeah, exactly. The entire plot of Purple Rain is how Morris Day in the time are bad.
Well, that's more of a St. Paul thing, isn't it?
Well, no, it's Minneapolis. It's First Avenue.
Oh, yeah.
They're not allowed in state lines, but yeah.
Okay. Anyways, what was I saying?
That's actually why the roof of First Avenue collapsed. The Morris Day and the time had snuck in, and then they triggered a trap ceiling.
This is like such a specific Minnesota conversation.
Yeah, I didn't know what this. This is weird.
Yeah, right, a portion of go the ahead First and Avenue continue, roof though. Collapsed on the second floor.
Yeah. Anyways,
local references.
Huey Lewis. To get back to it, Huey Lewis. or Hank, they're so mysterious about his character, and I'm not sure if he's like a sociopath, because that's kind of what he seems like, where he'll be like very emotive and having natural conversations, and then he'll be with someone else and he'll seem like a ruthless killer. Is that it?
But he's a hired thug, more or less.
He's a hired thug, you're saying?
Yeah, he does all of the horns dirty work. He's part of the blackmailing Josie team.
Yeah.
Wait, who are we talking about again?
He's meant to be one of the bad guys.
Hank. This is Norma's
Hank, no.
husband.
No, Hank is a total piece of shit. I mean, he's a total sociopath. He's a complete piece of shit. He's just... Yeah.
But, like, he's so nice. Every single time...
No,
like,
he's not. He's playing at it.
Yeah.
At the double R. No, I'm saying it's interesting.
Oh, okay.
It's a cool choice.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah.
He's
a
career criminal.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I like the idea of, like, the criminal... but like being disguised as like a, you know, like a Patrick Bateman thing. It's fun. It's fun for the audience.
American Psycho. Sure. Yay. References.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anyways, wait, so Kyle, that was your favorite character, right?
Yep.
What about you, Rushab?
Oh man. I didn't even realize I had we went on that for so long.
Didn't you already say what's his face?
Who? Oh, Albert.
Yeah,
you already said Albert.
Yep. So, all right. So you don't get to talk.
And I said James, and let's not even get into it.
Got into it. Favorite scene.
Yeah. Favorite scene. Oh, can I please say mine? Because I'm so
Go
happy
for
about
it.
The scene.
Have at it.
Leland coming in with his business partners, Ben and Jerry, with his white hair and singing and ready to party. And what just it was such a
that
fun scene.
That is also mine, so we're going to go ahead and just... Yeah,
merch.
I wish they had brie cheese and bread with them.
Oh,
that would have been great.
Oh my! I always get so hungry when that scene because I'm like, oh, that's like white bread and it's got like just a thick layer of brie on it. And I'm like, oh,
I love
that.
Brie
I
can imagine myself freaking out about white bread and brie cheese like that. So
with
or
butter
and brie cheese.
Well, it was so disgusting in that scene though because like they're like having dinner and you never see his wife again. By the way, I don't think you ever see his horns.
No, she's in the funeral episode.
Oh, okay, fair enough.
Yep.
But you don't really see her have a big, and she's just like, why is my life this terrible? And he's like,
Leland,
oh, brie cheese. Yeah, and they're just like freaking out, and like their mentally, or sorry, their developmentally disabled son is just like sitting there, and then Audrey's like, "Ooh, I'm a seductress," and it's just an insane scene. So just
Anyways, but I love it. I love Ben and Jerry. Last time we recorded this episode, we talked a lot about what position Leland is in regards to how terrible Ben and Jerry are.
Right.
And like, I don't think we actually got anywhere on
how
that.
complicit he is with Ben and Jerry's business.
Yeah, I think Leland is like, his fingers are equally in the dirty pies, and he goes to the one-eyed Jacks and like does stuff with prostitutes and like that.
It's hard to know since we've only known Leland for
when we start the show we never really see him in his natural habitat, you know.
We can't really know.
I still would say that he doesn't partake in that himself, but
I agree. Yeah,
he is aware of the shadier dealings.
I could be right though.
He's primarily their tax and financial attorney. He doesn't seem
it's
to have
possible
much.
That I'm right, though.
He doesn't have much association with the corrupt parts of their business, which obviously is related to the financial parts of their business. But it's all entirely handled through Ben. Jerry.
With
sorry.
He was a pretty substantial part of the Ghostwood estate sale, right?
And yes, but that he thought that was legitimate though. That there was a lot of because it was a very public deal, remember?
Right.
And then, that's why What's-Her-Face was involved.
Catherine?
Yeah, Catherine, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyways, but I like that scene. There was just so much energy.
Sure.
And everyone was having fun. And just as a viewer, it made me happy.
You got happy, if you will.
I Pharrell'd.
Yep.
Kyle, what was your favorite scene?
I know that it was nominated for Batter David Lynch, but man, I gotta give it up to that Great Northern intro. When I first watched it, it was way too long, but after I've seen the show again, I'm totally fine with the length. For some reason,
I've seen that scene like 5 times, and I'm still But I totally respect your opinion because it is a very seminal scene, regardless of how you see it.
Yeah, and I'm just a sucker for any of the supernatural elements. So, like, if I could lump in the ending scene, not necessarily stuff with Ronette Pulaski, even though I think that was really well done, but, like, if I were to lump in basically just the conversation that Dale Cooper has with the giant, and you might be able to argue that's the same conversation because the giant comes back and says, by the way, I forgot to tell you something. So it really is sort of this continuation of that. I know it's a little bit cheating, but I would take both of those because I always enjoy the supernatural elements of the show. And that's my answer.
Awesome. Well, let's just run through our notes. I have a lot of notes. Let's just talk about them.
Mm-hmm. Did you give a favorite scene?
Same as me.
I gave it the same as him. Yep.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Sorry.
Okay. Here are my favorite notes that I wrote. Old guy talks for like 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Lots of thumbs up. Giant. We haven't really talked much about the giant.
It's like the cryptic messages, really only one of them really comes to fruition.
Man with the smiling bag. But number two, owls are not what they seem, is a theory that I've been talking about recently about how owls are, they've been creepy. And
I thought originally
an owl stole a locket. I don't know.
I think the reason Cal and I haven't talked about it is because there are way better giant scenes coming up and other just weird scenes that just this one almost seems like not worth mentioning because of it.
But then also we should mention for listeners, without chemicals, he points. That's the third.
Yes.
Thing.
Yeah. Other notes. Turns out Coop's alive. He had a bulletproof vest.
Yep. Can I point out that we see another ugly facet of Ben's personality in this episode because Audrey says no to his advances, which is understandable for many reasons, he's basically just telling her and the viewers that, oh, no, I'm totally cool with raping this person. That's what's going to happen now. And it's uncomfortable.
And the mistress is like, hey, if he wants to rape the shit out of you, you let him rape you.
Oh, yeah.
You're a whore. Even
hey, sorry guys, I just disappeared. And turns out my roommates are watching Lord of War, and it's very, very loud.
I can't really hear it on your end. Don't worry about it.
Lord of War?
Yeah, but like Lord of War.
Is that Nicolas Cage movie?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know that's terrible, right? You should hit them.
People can like bad things.
No. You should walk in that room with a serrated blade and murder all of your roommates, and then yourself for being friends with them.
Right.
You know, I don't like Lord of War, but I don't like this conversation.
No, actually, I've seen the movie and it's not bad. But anyways,
so okay.
Moving on beyond that.
So we were talking about rape.
Yeah.
Let's see. Yeah, we got Lucy's recap scene. Coops, the super cop, gets up. This thing.
The bullet killed the tick.
Yeah.
Also, let's call it a bullet-resistant vest because there's no such thing as a bulletproof vest.
Sure, you nerd.
No, it's just it's a thing that people.
It's like a silencer. There are no silencers. There are suppressors.
It's yeah, perfect actually, Kyle. So yeah.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying.
That's you're literally talking about which whatever.
Don't worry about it.
It's important because people it ruins fiction for me. You know when people I don't know like. What Kyle just said, and also what I just said, you know, those things don't exist, and they just ruin fiction for me in that sense. Go ahead.
Wait, so you're saying that if I went to, like, a police station and was like, hey, do you wear bulletproof vests? They would, like, not know what I'm talking about?
No, they know what you're talking about, but you would just think you're stupid. They think you're... No, yeah. it's very much true. Like, you know, it's very... There's no such thing as a bulletproof vest. You know, it's resistant. You know, they can stop 9mm bullets sometimes for a certain range, but anything bigger than that, which is most bullets, it won't stop. And like Kyle
said, bulletproof vest wouldn't have a Wikipedia page.
They would. They'd have like,
Or would it be? It'd be a redirect vest, bullet or bullet resistant vest, bulletproof vest disambiguation.
Yeah,
the first one is no. It says bulletproof vest, also known as a ballistic vest or a bullet resistant vest. It's literally just a different name for it.
No, it's an incorrect description that has been.
I think this is like if you would say Roger Ebert was a movie critic, and I'd say actually he was a film critic.
Boom. No, it's not at all true because bulletproof implies something completely different because of the lingual parts of it. Bulletproof means that a bullet couldn't penetrate it, whereas resistant lets you know exactly what it is.
Yeah, but.
We are getting off topic.
Let's confirm that I'm right about this and that Michael is terrible.
Mike, just say he's right. We can talk about this later.
You're not going to really convince me that bulletproof. I think it's just a different word for the same thing.
No, it's definitely a real word. I'm just saying it's an inaccurate description of what an actual thing is.
Guys, Sarah Palmer was weird in this episode, right? Guys,
she's always weird, though, man.
Yeah. No, but one of my notes, Maddie comes down and talks to Sarah because she was freaking out at night.
She's the worst actress. I want her to not be on the show.
Even though she's Laura Palmer.
Yeah. I'm glad Laura Palmer died because the show Twin Peaks would probably just
don't
be
ever watch
Laura
Fire
Palmer.
Walk with me because it's mainly her and it's mainly just the worst. And they replace everyone else. Almost.
Well, they replaced Donna, and I think they replaced like one other character.
They replaced like three characters. Yeah, you're right. It's not very many people, but it's still the worst.
But it's something important to note. So when Maddie talks to Sarah about her dream, Sarah's only response to that whole thing, even though Maddie is like freaking the hell out, Sarah's only response to that is, "Was Laura in it?"
Yeah, that was weird. And then she like saw a stain on the carpet.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's like a darkening.
Yeah. Yeah. What other good ones do I have? When they show like the firefighter footage of the mill being burned down, that was like definitely not footage that was shot for the show. It looked so different.
Yep. Just some,
it looked like
some stock.
It looked like it was a different format. It looked so weird.
Yeah.
Like if literally they would have just put that on a TV in the context of the show, that could have made sense.
Mm-hmm.
But instead, I don't know. It just looks so bad.
Yeah. I also have a question to pose. Do you guys think that David Lynch hates psychologists?
I don't think he hates them. I think he doesn't understand them.
Yeah. Because, like, I mean, Jacoby's Jacoby, you know? Clearly, it's not supposed to be an accurate representation of psychologists. But like even other characters really approach or seem to approach the profession with like a lot of disdain.
Well, if you notice, there's no gray area for male characters in this series, especially male characters of authority. They're either noblemen, like they're like they are, you know, a Stark, or they're freaking, you know, they're Lannisters. I mean, they're just they're in it for themselves. They're wholly corrupt or extremely disturbed. You know,
yeah.
There's no middle ground. There's no gray.
Mm-hmm.
And
okay, I hear you.
Actually, I just thought of this. Maybe it's because I wonder if this is like before everyone started to realize, or it became common knowledge that like Freudian psychology or Jungian psychology is just complete BS.
Well, they knew like, Freud was BS for like at least 50 or 60 years now, right?
Like academically, probably, but artistically, yeah. Like people who write television shows and whatnot, like Frasier is a perfect example of this. Mm-hmm. It started even later than Twin Peaks, and Frasier is a Freudian psychologist.
Oh, exactly. People still think Freud is a legitimate, you know,
appendium.
So you're absolutely right, Kyle. Yeah, that's a fair assessment.
The class that I was just taking would reference Freudian psychology stuff all the time, and I'm like, hey, you're trying to teach us a lesson about stuff that, like, the basics I don't believe in.
Were you in a computer programming class?
Yeah, that class. What? We would talk. I don't want to get into it. Okay. But we would talk a lot about emotions and shit like
well,
that.
Well, if you did, as far as he's like, the worst person to reference because he doesn't know shit about emotions.
Right.
Freudian psychology has been thoroughly disproven on every level.
Exactly.
Well, I would have liked to have other people there. It was, yeah.
Other people on your team.
Yeah.
We had a whole meeting about microaggressions.
Well, that's an important thing to have. I don't know. I'm a liberal. Sorry. Let's
but
go
can
on.
I not like the term microaggressions?
No, you can't. But go ahead.
Yeah. Okay.
It's a stupid name. Call it literally anything else other than that.
You're being
call it
misogyny.
You're
microaggressing on me right now, bro. I'm being facetious.
Let's microaggress sorry. Back to this podcast.
Yes.
Sorry. I'm trying to turn this into my Adam Carolla style podcast.
Jesus. Let's just finish this episode. We're already over budget.
Well, I want to point out Bobby's I guess I love you too line, which is a great line.
Yes. That was
my man, Bobby. It was great.
It's written and portrayed in exactly the way you would imagine Bobby to respond to Shelley's I love you. It's great.
Well, she's in a hospital bed with needles and stuff inside her.
Yeah. And she like that near death experience makes her realize, oh yeah, I love this man. I'm gonna tell him. And he's like, oh shit, I guess I love you too.
You're reading that not charitably enough for Bobby. I read he was like, he had this huge reaction and he was like, I guess I love you too. Like he had
Michael, you're just so wrong here that I won't even qualify with any
I'm such
evidence.
A romantic.
No, that's not even romantic. That's just, man, what is wrong with you? I'm sad.
Wait, what?
What?
What's wrong with Mike's reading of that?
That is not at all romantic. He was very much like, Anyways, yeah, he was so much like, I guess I do love you, you know? He was just a moron there. She's like very much hurting. And I mean, a part of it's on her for being so dumb. But just good God,
dude! I'm just reading it a different way. You're taking this so. I'm not saying that's what it was. I'm saying another way to read it.
Mike.
Oh
yeah.
I think that's God's way of saying that I'm right and Mike is wrong. So.
By fading out his internet connection.
Yep.
Did I cut out?
Yeah, a little bit.
Did you miss my really good disagreement with what Rujub said?
Yes. Also, you sound bad right now too.
No, I'm sorry.
Well, that might be a good, because your recording is still probably going to be fine audio quality wise, but that might be a good indication for us to wrap it up.
Oh, geez. Okay, I was having fun. Let's keep arguing.
So for viewers, just to know, I won that argument flawlessly, and all evidence provided in opposition to me was terrible. So go ahead and wrap it up,
Kyle. You're getting edited out of the podcast.
100%. I was also going to say we could start a Facebook poll to see who was right.
Yeah, maybe we'll do that. Yeah. We're not even going to do a mystery bit because mystery bit can be Rushab apologizing right now for not hitting record last time.
I hit record. Yeah. And, you know.
Okay, let's wrap it up.
If the 20 people who listen to your podcast disagree with me, that is fine. I, I will.
Correction. There are 20 people who like the Facebook page. There are 2 billion people who listen to the podcast. So there's that.
Kyle, did you enjoy my Joseph Gordon-Levitt name drop?
Wait.
Did you not get that?
No. I don't get what you were referencing about him.
When Rushab said hit record, I said, okay, oh. Joe.
Ah. Ha.
You're the only person that could get that joke.
Yep, I get it now. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Oh, one thing. I mentioned it last episode, or the last time we tried to record this, and I'm mentioning it again because I want to. If anyone out there listening of our 2 billion listeners is into ambient music, check out Biosphere. He samples a few lines from this episode in a couple of his songs. So,
are we doing plugs? Let's do some more plugs. Roof, you got any plugs?
Yeah, I have a podcast that... I have 2 podcasts. One's my Leftovers podcast. That doesn't need any plugs, though. But my
have 3 billion listeners on that one.
Yeah, like 5 billion, but like like more than the human population on Earth.
I'm
like
so jealous.
25 billion. But anyways,
people just re-listen to it.
Yeah, I mean extraterrestrials into that. But let's move past that. We're talking about my my Game of Thrones podcast that Kyle actually co-hosts on. You know, when he feels up to it. Sure. called
I'm the I'm the David Wong to your Jack O'Brien.
Oh man, I want to kiss you so bad for that crack reference. Oh man. Well, anyways, imagine me kissing Kyle for that. But second, it's called the Pods of Castamere, and you can find us on Facebook. It's an excellent podcast about Game of Thrones / A Song of Ice and Fire, and you'll hear Michael guest starring on it soon as well, and Kyle obviously is on as well. So,
I would do one thing and apologize for offhandedly saying the word gross. I realize I could probably have just edited that out, but that was very hetero and cis normative of me, and all consensual love is beautiful. So.
He actually said that. So everyone knows,
that
no matter what he edits out, he actually texted me, no homo. It was Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve. Yeah. And God hates fags. So whatever he says, just know that Kyle's a homophobe.
Right.
Kyle, please, please bleep out what Rishim just said.
Whoa, I'm just trying to tell the truth. And you guys are censoring me with your homophobic agenda. Black lives matter, all right?
Great.
All right, we need in the show.
This is good. It's so political.
All right, peep on 20, everybody.
Peep on
next
20.
Episode, Rushab will not be here. But Rushab, thanks so much for coming.
Well, I'll be on every episode, talking. You son of a bitch. I will destroy about, your podcast.
I really like talking about the theory of the show with you, so thanks for coming.
Sure. Keep it live on the forums.
Yeah. Join us on the forums. All right, bye, everybody.
All right, have a good night, friends.
Bye.
Bye. Thank you.